The following program is a production of Chilling Entertainment and the creative team at Chilling Tales for Dark Nights, and a proud member of the Simply Scary Podcast Network. Visit simplyscarypodcast.com to learn more about this and our other weekly storytelling programs, and become a patron today to show your support and get instant access to our extensive archive of downloadable tales of terror. Thank you for listening, and enjoy the show. Disclaimer. Horror Hill is a horror anthology podcast bringing you scary stories from all corners of the internet and beyond. As such, certain stories include content that some listeners might find offensive. Listener discretion is advised. Greetings, friends, and welcome back to Horror Hill. As always, I'm the voice whispering into your ear, Eric Peabody. Tonight's episode features a story by one of my favorite regular authors on the show, J.R. Hamantaschen. The story is titled 7099 Brecksville Road, Independence, Ohio. Those of you familiar with J.R.'s work know that he's a master of dredging through the psychological sewer of the human mind. But tonight's story is a bit different. Sometimes J.R. cuts loose a bit and delivers a story that's direct and truly blood-soaked. I'm not spoiling anything here when I say that this is a creature feature of the highest order. So, without further hemming and hawing, let's settle in for something both vicious and viscous. You're listening to the free edition of this program. If you'd like to help support Horror Hill and also remove these pesky ads, head to chillingtalesfordarknights.com and click Patrons in the upper menu to sign up today. You'll get instant access to hundreds of ad-free stories, so what are you waiting for? Also, if you're watching on YouTube or Rumble, do us a favor and drop a like and subscribe. Become part of our dark circle, listeners. And now, from author J.R. Hamantaschen, I give you 7099 Brecksville Road, Independence, Ohio. There were three toilet stalls in the men's room at the Sunoco gas station at 7099 Brecksville Road in Independence, Ohio. One of them was occupied. If you were, say, washing your hands and looking at the stalls for whatever reason, a mistaken glance perhaps, you'd see, in the space below the door, a man's feet, his black work boots and dark blue Wrangler jeans. This was one of those bathrooms that had a distressing amount of clearance room between the stall doors and the floor. The man's feet flexed a bit, not staying stationary, but not in any unusual way, just in the usual fashion of a man using the toilet, shifting in the usual way a man does as he distributes his weight. The stall had been occupied all day. Men came in, most used the urinals. Less fortunate travelers whose activities required the use of a toilet obviously selected one of the two unoccupied stalls. If any of those less fortunate travelers accidentally opened the door on the stall occupied by the man with the black work boots and dark blue Wrangler jeans, they'd see that the disguise ended at his waist. From there emerged a man-sized praying mantis of vivid turquoise, each armored eye extended several inches in front of its face, connected by stalks. Each eye came protected by its creator, with three cruel-looking scorpion tails that shook with anticipation. The mantis's oversized claws were angular spiders, whose legs ended in sharpened shoots. If the claws got to eat, their waists would excrete through the legs and drip out the chutes. No one accidentally opened the door, despite the door always being left unlocked just for such an occasion. No one would see what lay inside. A pity. Someday, someone would walk in on one of Ormond's creations. The mantis creation was his personal favorite, and it hadn't had any action for years. He'd been proud of that one, and he placed it in the stalls of truck stops and gas stations that had inspiring names. Your Independence, Ohio, your Liberty, Texas, or your Prosperity, South Carolina. That working creation had been one of his proudest moments. A shame. One day, someone would accidentally push one of those bathroom doors open and see what lay in store for him. Another gas station, this one in Schenectady, New York. Schenectady, what an evocative name for so routine a town. In the spirit of that evocative name, Ormond tried something different. The legs in that stall wore straight-leg Levi's and steel-toed black Doc Martens. The body came furnished with Ormond's attempt at a long-sleeve brown athletic shirt, in the style of a Lonsdale or some other brand a 60s UK street punk might wear. He couldn't get the shirt right, though, and in frustration didn't put much effort into the texture work, telling himself that this subtle, sartorial aberration made the monster more singular and otherworldly. He had a working man's backstory in mind for this one. The face was a classic skull, but with blood-capped stalagmites for teeth and pulsating anemones for eyes. The trick here, or so Ormond thought, was that the eyes would pulse, but they would not shift or follow the movements of its prey, giving the creation a detached, almost disinterested mien, which, he hoped, would make it seem somehow scarier. But Ormond ended up not liking the creation, and neither did his superiors. He tried to create works of art to impress his superiors, even though he didn't have that much time left in his tour of duty. He wanted to inspire, come up with new ideas to keep the job interesting. Not like it mattered anyway, he thought ruefully as his creation occupied the stall, undisturbed, for the entire shift. Ormond would need to talk with the higher-ups about some ways to get some more intake opportunities for his creations to interface with the public. They were a wary group, and he knew he would need to mollify their concerns, let them know he would preserve the integrity of their venture. But they had to infuse some new ideas, otherwise the whole operation would be requisitioned off. It was 8 p.m. on a Wednesday night in mid-October, and Frank meandered around the surprisingly large Sunoco gas station located at 7099 Brecksville Road in Independence, Ohio. He filled up his tank, paid at the pump, and then parked, feeling it was as good a time as any to stretch his legs and pick up some road rations, maybe Red Bulls. He knew they were terrible for you, and Frank, middle-aged and overweight as he was, certainly didn't need to add to the problem. He didn't have diabetes, but he looked like he might, and if he was ever so diagnosed, no one would ever feign surprise with a straight face. Gas stations were a no-judgment zone. They had a kind of working-class metal vibe to them, people passing through, no shits given. Getting some highly sugared and caffeinated drinks when you were on the road was one of the only youthful thrills, if you could call such a thing a thrill, still available to him. Hanging out at night, cruising around, all caffeinated up, Master of Puppets or Among the Living blasting, pit stops at the mall parking lot, just fucking around. Didn't sound like much, but nights like that had been high school highlights for him. So, fuck it. Used to do some drugs and drink too much. Now, Dunkin' Donuts during the day, Red Bulls at night. Party down. He stalked the aisles, thinking about grabbing some Fritos, and picked up two Kind bars, too, knowing they were shit for you, but pretending to believe otherwise. The gas station clerk, an older white guy, maybe in his 60s, gave him the head nod, which Frank returned with gusto. Frank didn't hang out in gas stations much, though he looked like he should. When people met him, they often thought he was a trucker or some other blue-collar worker, like a mechanic or plumber or something. Cop face was how some people described it. When you're a white guy who is middle-aged, Bigger, bearded, single, gruff, and casually profane, people tended to think you can fix their sink or might ticket them for riding their bike on the sidewalk. His look probably got him better than average treatment from cops, security guards, or other blue-collar sorts. Frank was actually just an account executive at Time Warner Cable. People were inclined to valorize blue-collar types, and he suspected they disliked him a little or were disappointed somehow when they learned he was white-collar, like he was somehow turning his back on some caste they'd prematurely assumed he belonged to. Or maybe they just understandably hated Time Warner. Frank took his final bounty of Red Bulls, energy bars, Fritos, and a fruit and nut mix up to the counter. The old man greeted Frank and rung him up, working in that belabored, overcompensating way that old people sometimes utilized, perhaps as a way of saying, "Go easy on me." Ring something up, lean in, make sure it was right, single finger peck at the register, lean in, double check, really making a show of it. "Congratulations, old man. I get it. You're still a productive member of society." Frank wondered when he'd be that way. There was a sensibility, an aesthetic of being old that he still felt estranged from, thankfully. Maybe it was from being single. Domesticity aged you.
"Find everything you need, sir."
"I certainly did. Wish I didn't find the Fritos, but, you know, what are you gonna do?" Frank rubbed at his belly, a move he did pretty often, come to think of it. He was quick to self-deprecate, perhaps a way of softening strangers' expectations of him.
"Well, glad to hear it, sir."
The old man had a magazine on the countertop, spread open to reveal an advertisement for some local business school. "For those short on excuses and long on ambition," the ad read. Frank motioned to the ad, and when he was sure the man understood what he was motioning toward, said, "Do those kind of people really need the extra help?" The old man gave a puttering, quizzical look, and then chuckled, said,
"Amen to that, brother. Amen."
Frank wasn't entirely convinced the old man connected Frank's satirical comment with the ad, but whatever. Frank paid and took his bag and shimmy stepped away.
Should he?
He should.
"Hey, sir, is there a bathroom I could use? I'm a paying customer, remember? I earned it."
He lifted his bag. The old man, amiably, said,
"Even if you aren't, sir, I'd give it to you."
He explained that the men's bathroom was out back in a separate little building, and you had to input a 4-digit code on
one of those door lock things.
He gave Frank the code.
3787.
Frank repeated it, and then covered his mouth, said, "Oh shit, I don't want to give that out to just anyone." And the old man laughed. There was no one else in the gas station.
"Oh, that's all right," the old man said, just to speak.
Frank thanked the man and made to leave, and then stopped and asked if he could leave his bag there.
"Of course," the old man said. "I should have offered that. We do our best to maintain high standards back there, but still, you don't want to be bringing anything you later plan on eating back into the bathroom."
He gave the man his bag, thanked him, and added, "Maybe I should bring those Fritos back there then." And when he felt the man didn't understand, added, "Keep me from eating them." And the man did his old man laugh of questionable understanding and wave-saluted Frank as he left. Frank turned the slight corner upon opening the bathroom and was glad it was bigger than he would have guessed. It smelled overwhelmingly of ammonia and cleaning product, the sanitary equivalent of spraying on excess cologne when you don't shower, most likely. But hey, better than the alternative. The bathroom was empty, another plus. Two urinals ran across the right wall. He went over to one of the two urinals and allowed it to serve its function. Urinal apotheosis, keeping his stream on the urinal cake.
100% accuracy, he thought.
Despite that broad "we" the old man had used, Frank didn't think that the old man was personally coming back here and pitching in to clean up. But the old man wouldn't need to worry about deadshot Frank. Frank made that urinal cake bleed blue. He walked over to one of the two sinks, which were tucked into the left corner, perpendicular from the urinals. Behind the sinks were three toilet stalls.
He washed his hands, something he rarely did after just peeing. If you have to decontaminate your hands after touching your dick for a couple seconds, then you got major problems, he remembered someone said to him a long time ago. But, gas station. He checked himself out in the circular mirror above the sink. He didn't look good. He looked like a fat, bearded, middle-aged man, which he was. At least he had always been fat, so it didn't hang on him unnaturally, like some of those people whose bodies are clearly processing what to do with the excess weight. Frank's fat was evenly distributed, absorbed into the makeup of who he was, if that made any sense. He didn't have any wrinkles, really. A result of easy living and easy pleasures, he thought, looking forward to some Red Bull and cranked up Number of the Beast. He groaned, mentally. He should. He didn't want to. It was a fucking gas station. But better here than some other gas station, or holding it. Better to clean out the system. Those Red Bulls and Fritos were going to play havoc on his guts anyway. No one here, too. Good. These were those stalls that had, improbably and ridiculously, those huge bottom gaps, like 20% of the size of the door itself. And those side gaps between stalls that let you kinda see the occupants. Like, yep, there's a big fat guy sitting on the toilet. Yep, there's a big fat guy getting up to wipe himself. Yep, there's a big fat guy flushing. Stalls should be hermetically sealed, but he guessed that you gotta let the gas station crackheads know someone could see what they were doing if their bathroom rituals started involving pipes and tinfoil. He walked over to the stall on the far left end. Always go to the far stall. There was somebody in the middle stall, he realized. He saw the toes of black work shoes sticking out near the bottom gap. Silent as a mouse, that guy, apparently positioning himself to have as little cheek square footage on the toilet rim as possible while still maintaining balance. A couple of moments later, and he heard someone else come into the bathroom and occupy the farthest stall. Now there were three men, shitting in a row, mere feet from each other, a situation which always struck Frank as inherently comical. The bathroom humbled all, although the users of a gas station men's room were likely a humble lot to begin with. He did his business quickly. He didn't like looking down at his fat folds, having to push his little dick, little by comparison, remember, little by comparison, from under his fat folds to make sure he didn't pee on his leg. Something about doing this in a gas station was depressing, like he felt like he should be doing drugs or something, or like he hit close to some kind of toilet-use rock bottom, like taking a dump in a gas station should be forcing him to reevaluate his life choices. He flushed, always flush right after. He might look like a slob, but he wasn't an animal. Took a swipe of toilet paper and... fucker. It was a deceptive TP dispenser. There'd been a couple squares visible from inside the metal dispenser, but that was it. One feeble pull, and he was left with an empty cardboard roll. What? Would the crackhead steal the toilet paper? You needed to lock it up in metal dispensers and have us pecking at it like hamsters for water? Yeah, probably, realistically. Fucking goddamn America was going to shit. He groaned again, mentally. Fuck. He looked down at the toilet, back at the dispenser, back at the toilet, like the gods of lavatories must see the privations of one of their needy acolytes and dive down to remedy this injustice. Fuck. He could just wait it out until the other folks leave and run into their stalls like a fat, pilfering raccoon. He pictured himself running over like a ninny, pants down at his ankles. Fucking hilarious. How'd he get into these fucking situations? Oh, that's right. He took a dump in a gas station men's room. Not hard to figure out. This was no backstage bender or blackout bloody nose from his youth, but no fucking picnic either. So, he waited, poking into the metal dispenser as if maybe some enterprising crackhead balled up toilet paper and stuffed it somewhere, like the prisoner who examines all the corners of his cell for an emergency spoon to dig himself out. Fucking hilarious. How long has that guy in the middle stall been there? I mean, He'd been there from before I even got here. I first pissed, then washed my hands, and I haven't heard shit from there. No pun intended. Not even a flush. He knocked on his side of the wall, perhaps a bit intemperately, like he was fueled partly by the resentments of any poor schmucks who might be waiting to use that middle stall before he got a chance to make use of that precious toilet paper. When you're knocking for toilet paper in a men's room, you gotta go all in, like staring down a bear. No room for fear.
"Hey man, can I borrow some toilet paper in there? This stall is empty, can you believe it?"
He tried to deepen his voice, speak brusquely but unthreateningly, as if to accentuate that this was a man favor. You know, help a guy out.
"I've never done this before, believe me. This isn't on my bucket list, asking for toilet paper in a fucking gas station."
No answer. He waited a beat to make sure no answer was forthcoming, and tried again.
"I know, man, sorry, but can I please get some toilet paper? If you could just pass it under the gap, Lord knows the gaps are big enough." "Sorry. Again, I can wait a second, not like I'm going anywhere."
No answer.
"Anyone alive in there?"
Maybe it was a crackhead in there after all, or a homeless person. Would he really want a homeless person handing him toilet paper? I mean, a non-smelly homeless person would be fine, but can I just imagine getting a clump of toilet paper passed to me that smells worse than the ass I'll be wiping? Guy passes me a dead rat. Can I imagine that? It'd be hilarious. Wipe myself and get ass cancer immediately.
What should he do in this situation? Ask for toilet paper from the farthest stall? Create a toilet paper courier service? Hand it off under each stall until it reached him? If the middle stall wasn't game, then it wouldn't work. Fuck it, he'd have to wait until the farthest stall left and use that stall. Hopefully that guy didn't punish his stall too bad.
I'm almost done.
He heard a timorous voice, far enough to know it was coming from the farthest stall. It was the voice of a teenager, or young adult, responding to an authority figure. Frank guessed he'd deepened his voice too much. Ha! Hoped the kid wasn't expecting him to step out and be Batman.
"Thanks, brother."
Frank flushed again, just for the euphonic optics. There was nothing left there to flush. Left the stall and washed his hands. He tucked himself into the corner, away from the farthest stall, since he didn't want to seem like he was hovering over the poor guy. But what about this guy in the middle stall? He peered under the middle stall as best he could without crouching down. He saw those black shoes, legs and blue jeans doing usual toilet ministration shuffling. The feet switched positions. The guy was alive in there, at least. Maybe he didn't speak English? No, it was obvious Frank had been addressing him. Anyone would have said something, even something like, "no English." And anyone in America knew toilet paper, unless the dude was wiping his ass with his hand in there. And if he was using his hand, all that toilet paper was going to waste. The farthest stall opened, and the kid looked kind of like Frank imagined. Early 20s white guy, 5'7", thin frame, hoodie without the hood up, scruffy facial hair. Something about his chin and nose looked eminently punchable. Not that the kid looked like a bad guy or anything, but there are some people who just have a punchable, annoying face for whatever reason. The kid nodded at Frank as he walked out. Frank nodded back, and the kid went over to the other sink to wash his hands.
"There's plenty of paper in there."
"Thanks, man." Frank stayed back, still, planning on waiting for the kid to leave the bathroom entirely. It was a little embarrassing, the whole situation, and he didn't want to go into the stall just yet, imagining the kid might be especially attuned to listening in on him for whatever reason. The kid spoke to him in kind of a deferential way, probably because Frank looked like what that kid probably thought a classic blue-collar guy looked like. That kind of deference happened quite a bit more than you might guess.
"I think this guy might be sick or something in there."
Frank pointed at the middle stall.
"Hey, sir, are you okay in there? Do you need help? I mean, not bathroom help, I mean..."
Frank laughed gutturally.
"But like, physical help?" Like, do you need a hospital, or do you need us to call someone for you?
The kid stepped in, eager to supplement Frank. Frank looked at the kid, gave the kid an incredulous look about the stall occupant, a can-you-believe-this-guy-in-here look.
I think we should tell the gas station owner, I guess.
I'll do that. I gotta get gas anyway. You can go do what you need to. I got it, man.
The kid gave him a lighthearted but reassuring look. Kid wasn't so bad after all. Seemed like a cool guy, actually.
Thanks, man. If this gas station had a bar attached, I'd be buying you a drink for sure.
Frank thought of his musky turd gristle building up inside him, already causing him to itch back there. Frank closed the stall and started to do what he came to do. Rim of the bowl was clean. The kid had probably swabbed it with toilet paper to make sure there was nothing wet on it. Good kid, that kid. Frank wondered how long he'd spent in the bathroom, if the clerk would say anything about him being gone for so long, and the car trip he still had in store after this little fiasco concluded. Dimly beneath those thoughts was the kid, addressing the middle stall again, and the presence of the kid moving toward the stall, intuited through truncated light and the close-by pitter-patter of feet. Then, a muffled creak of a stall being opened, and nothing cognizable was heard. There was a forward, lunging motion of something jerked forward. Frank, fat, solitary, and slothful, sometimes thought himself not a real person, half a person, a creature who could only survive in a world brought to heel with modern conveniences, ready-to-eat meals, and customer service on command, to the point he sometimes thought he lost whatever instincts were inherent to the human animal. But something stirred, an eruption of spastic fear, bursting through him with the shock of a hand emerging from a grave. Something was happening, something catastrophic, and it was happening right next to him, just behind this feeble wall. There was a cacophony of competing thoughts, whirling so quickly as to be without substance. Stupid is the thought he tried to substantiate. Stupid. Nothing wrong, nothing could be wrong with his pants down. That wasn't allowable, somehow. But he knew he was wrong, because he heard a pitted sound of a body part being invaded. And before he could rationalize that, the sound of rending, of being torn apart, and a heaving of great force, and splatter of a great hot weight of blood and viscera. It was dripping, this blood, down under this giant gap between the stalls. Although not all the blood he saw was flowing into his stall, some of it was pooling around something pink and meaty. Something. God, he didn't want to see what it was, but it must have been an intestine or liver or something. These organs he knew of but knew nothing about or what they looked like. And he thought, crazily, about a hernia surgery he'd had. Good God. Did doctors have to look at this stuff all the time? How could they do it? And there came an explosion in his mind. But as he stared at the blood and the organs underneath the stall, as the blood and organs refused to disappear like a parlor trick, or he refused to wake up, then the shock went into a kind of overdrive, where it went from overwhelming to unbearable to abstracted. He fell down on his bare knees, pants around his ankles still clutching his clawed, foul-smelling toilet paper. His legs engrossed in gore. His body reacted. Move! And he pushed himself forward, floundering onto his stomach, the warmth and musk of slippery viscera impossible. For how could there be so much warmth to the parts of a human body? Maybe this wasn't a human body. Maybe this was a trick. But no. The kid had seemed too earnest. No, this was real. He scrambled up, got between the gap and the door. As big as the gap was, Frank was too big to fit. It was all a fraught blur, but he retained enough of himself to unlock the door and get out of the stall. He was saturated with blood on his legs and briefs, and he needed to pull his pants up or he'd trip. There was blood in his mouth. Oh, God. And there were patches on his shirt that stuck to him, of a texture more solid than blood. Bits of muscles or
bone on him. Dear God, he couldn't contemplate. Beneath that was a survival instinct. He was doing everything right. He was getting out. Keep a hold of yourself. There's still the ever slight chance that this is a prank of some kind. People just don't explode. And he saw himself in the mirror. He was still in shock, and the middle stall was now open. A half of the boy's face, in a grimace of perpetual agony. He recognized the boy's face as if he were an artist who'd spent a lifetime studying his muse. The curvature, the eye, the personality. Yes, the personality. For in this moment of hell, he craved the companionship of the boy, and felt a searing torment at his loss. That agonized death face as bad as the death face of his mother or best friend. The face was cleaved in half on the floor. Sitting on the toilet, the lower half of a man, that asshole man who wouldn't answer, his black shoes and dark jeans. His upper body was that of some iridescent turquoise, man-sized insect with the face of a clown. Beneath the heavy caked makeup was clearly some kind of bug, a large triangular beak-like snout, mandibles. The left half of the face was caked royal blue, the right half magma red. There were some small splotches of red on the blue side, which Frank recognized as blood. Gold, imbricated sparkles vertically bisected the blue and red sides of the face, reflecting back light, running transverse across the face, as unnaturally cruel as a railroad track across a pristine landscape, appeared barbed metal that lifted at each end like a slight smirk. Two tendrils of antenna hung wispily from its head, so faint they could only be glimpsed when the thing moved, which it did, twitchily. An unexpected four-sided hole appeared above the metal barb, exploding Frank's sense of the geometry of the creature, for surely he thought the beak-like snout was where the mouth would be. But he was wrong. The creature lifted its arm. The arm was nothing but a long protrusion that ended in tri-pointed barbs. Then, another arm emerged from its other side. The other hand had, he wasn't sure how many fingers, but more than a human hand. And the fingers were arranged in such a way as to be nothing like a human hand. And no more time to spend examining because the thing was getting up, moving toward him, not with great speed, but it was definitely bounding forward on those simple, unspectacular, frumpy man legs. The boy was a chunky mess across the bathroom stall. Frank was stunned, in a frenzied daze, an ambulant catatonic. He flailed his arms as if reacting to a surprise, huge explosion, and then turned and ran, unthinkingly. He heard something sliding and fumbling roughly on the bathroom floor. Something passed him on the floor. He glanced at it. Flesh, bone, and blood. A segment of arm. No time. He bounded forward and heaved himself onto the bathroom door, and thank God it opened outward. "Damn, man, watch it!" complained a dark-skinned man, looking down and then nursing his elbow where the swinging door had struck him. From his angle and proximity to the door, Frank surmised this man had been putting in the code when Frank burst out of the door. "Run!" Frank wheezed, already gassing out of breath. He would never make it to his car. "Run, hun!" Frank repeated, to the extent his lungs would allow. Frank ran and looked back, hoping his urgency had been warning enough. He couldn't make out what happened. He saw a collision of forms, the man falling down, but the shape continuing on, righting itself after the collision. When Frank looked back, he saw the shoes and legs of the creature, and part of him still wanted to believe he was just being chased by a man, a regular, non-imposing man. But when he glimpsed what rose above the waist, the turquoise insect shape,
the bold colors that bifurcated the face, flattened outside in the dark, but still noticeable if you knew to look for it. The strange reflection of the gold dust and macabre metal zipper scar. Good God. The creature bounded past the fallen man, and then, mid-stride, seemed to course correct, turn around slightly, and beeline for the stranger. Frank looked forward, pumped his body, heard the screams of the fallen man, and then real or imagined sounds of brutality. Forget it. Keep running. Keep running. He was getting close to his car. Don't look back. Don't look back. He knew if he looked back, he'd see the creature gaining. Despair would overtake him. Hope would deflate out of him painfully, a searing in his gut. He'd be hobbled. Give up. No. Just keep running. He was steps from his car. Hand on keys. Hand on keys, he thought. Don't lose it at the last moment. Hand on keys. Have your hand on the keys. He got to his driver's side door. Hand on keys. Hand on keys. And hit the unlock button, and the car blinked affirmatively. He had his hand on the door, and he couldn't help but turn around. And the monster was not behind him. It was out of sight. Don't be stupid. Get in the car. Get in the car. And he got in the car. Key in ignition. Key in ignition. And put the key in the ignition and started the car and peeled off. The old iPod connected to the radio sprang to automatic life, crunching out converges, fault, and fracture. He honked the horn like a maniac, propelled by the abrasive screams of bloody murder and gnarled riffs that blasted out of his radio, blasting out of his brain. The exit was in the direction he had run from. He'd have to pass the gas station store and the bathroom, and he thought, fuck it, just ride over the grassy median. But that could destroy his car, and then where would he be? He'd be a sitting duck. So he kept his hands on the horn. He wanted to yell to the old man in the station to get out, get out! But he wouldn't roll down the windows or stop the car. That would be suicide. He hoped his horn was warning enough. But what if the old man or others in the station heard the horn and stepped outside to investigate and ran right into their deaths? But he couldn't think that. There was no time or point in hypothesizing. He had to get out. Just get out of here. His car brights picked up soupy entrails and abysmal splatter, sights so disgusting and plainly wrathful that they just couldn't have been constituent parts of a human being, just impossible that the human body could awaken such feelings of repulsion and disgust. Press on. He sped out of the exit, hitting part of the curb, so he spun out, but thank God there were no cars, no Mack trucks careening down the road. No crazed monster of impossible dimensions hanging for dear life atop his car, clawing its way in. Only about half a mile away did he think to lower the volume on his radio, but he immediately turned it back up. The quiet frightened him. He needed the pounding riffs to cancel out the quaking pandemonium that tore through his mind, and he screamed and shook, pulled on the steering wheel, partly out of frayed exhilaration, but mainly still out of disbelieving fear. It needs to stay in the bathroom. That's the point. The lower half is too unwieldy to give chase. The fat man should never have been able to escape the bathroom, and when he did, the creature should have disappeared immediately. Ormond fumed, the indignation of the misunderstood, the unappreciated. They'd approved it. They'd approved the design, temperament, the whole agenda. And they wouldn't let him transfer now. He'd never get to airplanes now. But fine, understood, whatever you say.
You've been listening to 7099 Brecksville Road, Independence, Ohio, by J.R. Hamantaschen.
J.R. Hamantaschen is a writer of short stories, having released several collections, including A Deep Horror That Was Very Nearly Awe, with a voice that is often still confused, but is becoming ever louder and clearer, and You Shall Never Know Security. J.R. also co-hosts a horror podcast called The Horror of Nachos and Hamantaschen. You can find collections of his work at Velux Books. I'm hesitant to say that no one is a fan of using gas station restrooms. I'm sure some of you out there enjoyed this story in a completely different way than the rest of us. But I think it's safe to say that most prefer to avoid that scenario. So now, after this brand new what the fuck hypothetical, does it make it easier or harder to go while on the go? On one hand, now you've got something fresh to worry about besides the usual. But on the other, maybe we've suddenly reset the bar for acceptable bathroom experiences. After all, dealing with a filthy commode and no toilet paper is still a damn sight better than, oh, getting ripped to pieces by an insectoid clown. In any case, I'd like to thank J.R. Hamantaschen for tonight's tale, and also all of you fine folks for joining me. Until next week's episode, your homework is to listen to every song and album mentioned in this story. We have Master of Puppets by Metallica, Among the Living by Anthrax, Number of the Beast by Iron Maiden, and Fault and Fracture by Converge. You will be graded on both listening comprehension and enthusiasm. So, until next time, get rockin' and stay spooky. You've been listening to the Horror Hill Podcast, a production of Chilling Entertainment and the creative team at Chilling Tales for Dark Nights. Tonight's episode was hosted, narrated, scored, and finalized by yours truly, Eric Peabody. Additional music by Nikki McSorley. Got a terrifying tale of your own that you'd like performed? Email it to us at submissions@simplyscarypodcast.com to have your work considered for future production. Note that any writing utilizing artificial intelligence is ineligible. If you enjoyed tonight's episode, why not help us spread our dark presence online? You can follow Chilling Tales for Dark Nights on social media, and upvote, subscribe, and hit the bell notification icon if you're listening to this on YouTube. It helps us out a lot, and also keeps you up to date on new episodes. If you'd like access to uninterrupted horror, free of ads and these annoying bookend segments, might I recommend signing up to be a patron? You'll get access to hundreds of episodes of this show, as well as everything from the other programs in the Chilling Tales for Dark Nights cabal. That means all of Scary Stories Told in the Dark, Drew Blood's Dark Tales, and more. It's a veritable smorgasbord of horrific delights. Head to chillingtalesfordarknights.com to get started. If you're looking for someone to narrate or handle audio production for your own personal project, I just so happen to know a guy. Email me at ericpeabodyvoice@gmail.com. That's ericpeabodyvoice@gmail.com. And we can talk details. If darkness is what you're after, listener, your search is over. Yet, let it be known, you haven't found the darkness. The darkness has found you.